Hello and welcome to the Swiss Info Program. I'm Susan Masika. Oh, if you only knew what a stupid, dull, insignificant, savage people they are. It's not enough to travel through as a tourist. No, try to live there for some time. Those words were once spoken by Russian writer Fyodor Dostoevsky about the Swiss. His evaluation is pretty harsh, but it's one of many accusations and assumptions often leveled against the people of Switzerland. Irish-Swiss author and former Swiss Info journalist Claire O'Dea challenged Dostoevsky's viewpoint and other stereotypes of the Swiss in her new book, The Naked Swiss, A Nation Behind 10 Myths. Are they really boring, xenophobic, brilliant, crooked bankers? O'Dea spoke to Swiss Info journalist Veronica DeVore about what she found out.
The starting point for me was this impression that was building up over the years that I felt that the Swiss were misunderstood and misrepresented in some cases. The idea was that I would take the most popular assumptions that are made about the Swiss, separate them and examine them one by one. So that's what we've ended up with. The kind of challenge was to look at the facts behind these clichés and see what stands up. But ultimately, I would like the reader to be able to decide, based on the evidence, whether these assumptions hold or not.
You yourself came to Switzerland from Ireland originally and had that experience, of course, of having your own assumptions, your own expectations, maybe clichés in the back of your mind about what Switzerland is. How did you decide on these 10 myths? To what extent did your own experience come into deciding which ones you were going to focus on?
There were two things going on in terms of leading towards writing this book. One of them would be my personal experiences of settling in and making a new life. And that did actually then pick up momentum and was getting better and better all the time. And then the other thing was the professional side. So basically most of the material in this book relates to issues that I covered as a journalist, freelance and working for Swiss Info over more than 10 years. And so I was writing about culture, politics, business, and those topics kind of, you know, did become clear. You know, they really stood out from each other as time went by.
What are some of the most surprising elements that stick out to you from the research that you did for this book?
When people think of Switzerland, you know, it does have this kind of image of being a paradise. You know, it's a country that's perfectly run. Everything is on time. People have really strong political rights and everything. But more than that, it's also a naturally unspoiled country. So, yeah, my presumption definitely would be that Switzerland is pristine. The lakes are clean, the air is clean, you know, the environment is well protected. When I was looking into that, digging into that a bit in the chapter about the Swiss being brilliant, you know, basically being perfect, this idea, yeah, I was surprised to discover that because two-thirds of the land surface is mountainous, you have most of the population living in a third of the land surface, like 90% of the population living there. So in actual fact, Switzerland is densely populated. So the experience of people living here is not walking through unspoilt meadows because, you know, they might do that at the weekend, but they will probably live in a built-up area. There is a problem with noise pollution because of the density of the whole traffic network. There is a problem with air pollution. And then there's a problem with overdevelopment and, you know, eating up land all the time. You know, there's constant development going on and, you know, the things being paved over. So as a result, then you have, you know, more than a third of the native species that are threatened. And, you know, that's something I wouldn't have thought that Switzerland had such a problem with biodiversity, but it's struggling like other developed countries to protect the environment.
You present some very interesting information about each of the myths. You look at what the facts are on both sides of the argument. But then you also bring in these stories of people. For example, the cases of an immigrant from Hungary who fled refugee camps there and an Italian couple that came to Switzerland to work and was in some ways discriminated against, but ended up staying. How did you find those individuals and how did you kind of go about weaving their stories into the factual elements of the book?
It was very important for me to introduce Swiss people or people who live in Switzerland and have become Swiss because I wanted to show that, you know, the interesting side to life here and the diversity of the people. So I think in almost every chapter, you know, there's a personality that comes through. There might be a little life story or something. And And yeah, those people were representing different things. The Italian couple that you mentioned are parents of somebody that I know. And because I was writing about that early phase of this massive wave of immigration that took place in the 60s and 70s, which was predominantly from Southern Europe, and they were mainly the Italians, who are still the biggest immigrant population in Switzerland. I thought of this couple who I'd never actually met, but I'd heard of them, and I'd heard that they actually had moved back to Italy, and I wanted to find out how they were. And just had a lovely time kind of asking them, you know, for them, they were probably hadn't been asked in years about those early days and, you know, the experience of going over the border on the train and the train is stopped. And, you know, the woman, she was younger, she was maybe only 20 or something, and she had to strip and have a medical examination. You know, I actually didn't mention that in the book. And, you know, she was so shocked, you know, as an Italian Catholic girl, she'd never had to take her clothes off before in her life. And so while, you know, on the one hand, you're talking about the politics of that time, and there was this referendum to limit immigration in the early 1970s, and there was a bit of a bad climate, you know, then to meet people who lived through that, who thrived despite that, all of that, and in fact weren't able to move back to Italy. They tried it and they just weren't able to because they had adapted so much to Swiss life. They had become more Swiss than the Swiss themselves. You know, they appreciated the way things are here.
Those immigrant families are related to one of the chapters in the book. I believe it was The Swiss Are Xenophobic, mm-hmm. about that issue. Was that the hardest chapter to research, or which one of these 10 myths was the most difficult for you to bust or confirm or go at from different angles?
The most difficult by far was the Second World War. The question is, did the Swiss help the Nazis? That's something people will say kind of in jest. You know, they'll, you live in Switzerland, friends of the Nazis or Nazi gold. And they mention things like this. After kind of looking into all of those different issues within the issue, I kind of felt that the Swiss have been judged in harsher terms than other European countries. One of the reasons for that could be that, you know, this kind of idea that the Swiss got away scot-free, that they emerged from the war unscathed, and which materially they did. They came out of the war in a really strong position. They didn't have to rebuild their whole industry from scratch, and they didn't lose a generation of men and all of that kind of thing. So that possibly makes it harder to forgive them because they didn't suffer enough.
Here at Swiss Info, we cover the Swiss banking sector a lot, and that must have been a fairly difficult chapter for you to research as well, if any
Definitely.
Of my experience as a
Definitely.
Journalist trying to cover banking is...
That comes in second position after the war. Yeah.
What did you run into there with trying to look into the Swiss are a nation of bankers?
I tried to establish what share of the economy banking takes up or contributes, and it is less than you might think. The banking sector is huge, but it doesn't actually define or overshadow Swiss life. The number of people employed in banking is only just over 3% of the workforce. But I wasn't only going to say, oh, well, it's smaller than you think, therefore it doesn't count. I mean, Switzerland is a global leader for holding and managing offshore wealth. It has either between a fifth and a quarter of the global market. One of the estimates is about $2 trillion. So that's money belonging to very rich people all around the world who bank in Switzerland or have their assets managed in Switzerland. And because scandals keep coming to light all the time, because by its very nature, it's difficult to say that most of that wealth is clean, you know, because we don't live in a perfect world where everybody behaves impeccably. So there's definitely tainted money in the Swiss financial marketplace, as there is in all the equivalent marketplaces and people and places that specialize in offshore wealth. Really, if we're serious, it has to be tackled in a global way with global cooperation, which is sadly lacking. They don't do themselves any favors either, you know, the people who are implicated. I mean, I'm not saying they, the Swiss, all the Swiss, but one of the reasons that all of these bad impressions about the Swiss involvement in the Second World War, or not that they were involved, but their role, is because the Swiss did not address it adequately themselves. The banks did not address it adequately themselves. And okay, you had the Cold War, where because of the different alliances between countries, Switzerland was an ally and, you know, wasn't about to be roasted about some banking that it did 50 years, 40 years before. But when the Cold War ended, that's when the foot dragging that was going on in the Swiss banks and obstructing people who were trying to trace assets that may have belonged to their family members, you know, when that was revealed, that really left a very, very bad taste in people's mouths.
You bring some of yourself into this book by using the first person in some cases, by kind of weighing in on issues, on things you've observed living here now in Switzerland for as long as you have. Was that always part of the plan, to bring yourself into the book the way that you did, or did it kind of come organically as you were writing?
The two chapters where my personal experience comes through the most would be in the Swiss are sexist chapter and the Swiss are boring, you know, because that is such a familiar charge that you keep hearing, and it's kind of a lazy accusation against a nation or a national character. So I felt after all the people I knew and all the time I'd been here, there was so much to say on that. The Swiss are boring. It's also, that goes kind of hand in hand with the Swiss are cold or unfriendly. Those sorts of criticisms that you hear, and they tend to be from people who have not spent a long time here and may not speak a national language. Although there is a more formal way of interacting with people that you don't know in Switzerland, and there isn't this immediate openness and prying, you know, people are not going to ask you prying questions straight off, and they don't expect you to do the same to them. But the idea that you can't make friends with Swiss people or can't find that they're just as wonderful and interesting as any other nationality is hardly fair.
Could you tell me a little bit more about who you hope will read this book and what you hope that they'll get out of it?
When people find out they're moving to Switzerland, first thing they do is look up books about Switzerland, and they want to prepare themselves. And I think that this book would be a very good preparation for somebody who's planning to move here. And then also for the people who are, they may even be quite far down the road in their time here, but they might get some satisfaction from seeing kind of the record set straight by some of the research in this book. And as a matter of fact, there is a section of Swiss people who read in English and are interested in books about Switzerland. They're interested to know how they're perceived by outsiders, because there's such a large foreign population here. It's one in four. And it is something that the Swiss have to deal with all the time. And, you know, they are constantly interacting with foreigners, and they are called upon to show their best side all the time. And really, it should go both ways. I would like to think that this book makes sort of some contribution to this kind of mutual understanding, you know, inside the country, but also for people who are observing and commenting from outside.
You have some, what I also found to be very compelling, if not flattering, quotes from Dostoevsky about what he thought of life in Switzerland when he was here for a while.
I mean, some people, that they will stay in the Dostoevsky frame of mind for their entire time in Switzerland, and they'll leave again. And it's such a pity.
And you say in the afterword that that's how you felt as well. You're right. I recognize that impotent anger because I felt it once myself. For you personally, what were sort of the essential steps of getting past that? Was writing this book part of that process for you?
The writing of this book happens to coincide with my applying for Swiss citizenship and going through the process and having Swiss citizenship granted in October of last year, 2015. So actually, that's probably not accidental. You know, this is the time that it's coming together where I feel that I've managed to achieve a level of integration where I feel comfortable and accepting of my Swiss life. So yes, I had my Dostoevsky days, and we all have to be always open to learn and to question ourselves and to adjust our opinions and not to have too fixed ideas. I've found it both helpful and interesting, yes, to examine these subjects and to be able to have a clearer picture in my head now of Switzerland and also my feelings about Switzerland.
That was author and former Swiss Info journalist Claire O'Dea speaking with Veronica DeVore about her new book, The Naked Swiss, A Nation Behind 10 Myths, which is now out with Burgley Books. You can read more from Claire on swissinfo.ch in an opinion piece she wrote about Swiss myths. Thanks for listening, and thank you to studio technician Danny Wheeler. I'm Susan Masika.